Medicom Medical Publishers produces peer-reviewed reports and highlights on major medical meetings. We bring the Congress to the physician.
Welcome to this podcast, which is brought to you by Medicom Medical Publishers. Today I will discuss six of the presentations that were held at the Skin Inflammation and Psoriasis International Network annual meeting, which was held in Paris from July 6th to July 8th of this year.
Thank you to all the healthcare professionals who have worked so hard to bring us through the current pandemic.
The first study I would like to talk about is the Phase 3B Radiant trial, which compared bimekizumab and secukizumab in psoriasis. The durability of treatment response in patients with moderate to severe psoriasis was evaluated in a post hoc analysis of the Phase 3B head-to-head trial B Radiant. The study evaluated participants achieving a psoriasis area and severity index, or PASI, equal or below 2 or 0 on bimekizumab or secukizumab at week 16 in their ability to maintain the response continuously through week 48. After randomization, 743 trial participants received either 320 mg of bimekizumab 4 or 8 weekly or 300 mg of secukinumab every week until week 4 and every 4 weeks thereafter. Overall, baseline characteristics were evenly distributed except for the severity of psoriasis, noted as a higher percentage of investigators' global assessment scale 4 in the bimekizumab arm, with 35.1% versus the secukinumab group, with 27.6%. Study results at week 16 revealed an achievement of PASI 0 in 61.7% in the bimekizumab arm and 48.9% in the secukinumab arm, whereas PASI equal or below 2 was found in 85.3% and 76.5% respectively. Comparing the maintenance rates, 63.7% of bimekizumab and 54.3% of secukinumab participants were able to retain PASI 0. A continuance of PASI equal or below 2 response from week 16 to 48 was detected in 88% of the bimekizumab and 79.1% of the secukinumab group. Of note, 93% and 87.4% of study participants who started with a PASI 0 at week 16 held up a PASI equal or below 2 to week 48. So, in conclusion, the higher percentage of bimekizumab-treated participants reaching PASI 0 or equal or below 2 at week 16 versus those in the secukinumab arm were perpetuated into higher rates of a continuous maintenance of response with ongoing treatment up to 48 weeks. Next, the Phase 3 Ixora PETS trial delivered some interesting results on ixekizumab in children with psoriasis. Dr. Marieke Seiger of the Radboud University Medical Center in the Netherlands presented the results. Long-term efficacy of ixekizumab in children and adolescents with moderate to severe psoriasis, especially in difficult-to-treat areas, was a focus of research by an international group whose primary investigator was Dr. Marieke Seiger. They presented data from the Phase 3 Ixora PETS trial and its open-label extension until week 108. Of the 171 participants randomized in the placebo-controlled study phase, 83.7% concluded the extension phase after more than 2 years. The mean age at baseline was between 13 and 14 years, and the diagnosis of psoriasis had been established at a mean age of 4.7 years ago. The overall efficacy results showed psoriasis area and severity index, or PASI 75, 90, and 100, responses of 91.7%, 79.0%, and 55.1% respectively. A considerable proportion of participants in the placebo and ixekizumab arms presented affections in challenging areas at baseline. Nails, 21.4% and 29.6%, scalp, 89.3% and 88.7%, and palmar plantar, 16.1% and 14.8%. The detailed analysis of these sites found clearance of psoriasis in a substantial percentage of participants at week 108. 68.1% achieved nail psoriasis severity index score of 0. 76.2% achieved psoriasis scalp severity index score of 0. and 90% achieved a palmoplantar psoriasis area and severity index of 0. Also, 87.5% had no psoriasis on the genitals. Furthermore, a significant reduction in itch from baseline was observed. In summary, responses to treatment with ixekizumab were upheld in the special focus zones. The investigators further concluded that these challenging body areas significantly impact patients' quality of life. Next, I would like to talk about the phase 3 SYMPASI 1 and SYMPASI 2 trials, which investigated sertralizumab for anxiety and depression in psoriasis. Professor April Armstrong of the Keck School of Medicine of USC in California presented the results. Does treatment of psoriasis with sertralizumab pegol also affect comorbid anxiety or depression? Pooled data from 3-year data of the phase 3 SYMPASI 1 and 2 trials was used to assess the resolving rate of these conditions through the Hospital Anxiety and Depression Scale, or HADS. HADS allocated higher values to more severe symptoms, and scores of 11 to 21 stand for moderate to severe diseases, while values of 7 or less represent no anxiety or depression. SYMPASI 1 and 2 included a double-blind treatment and maintenance phase from weeks 0 to 16 and 16-48, followed by an open-label extension through week 144 and a safety follow-up to week 152. Among the 361 participants with psoriasis receiving sertralizumab pegol, every second week, one group's dosage was 200 mg and the others 400 mg. The mean baseline age was 45.3 years and 36.8% were women. The mean baseline dermatology life quality index was 14.0, the mean HADS anxiety was 6.2, and the mean HADS depression was 4.9. In general, about 31.3% of the participants with anxiety and 47.1% of those with depression achieved HADS scores below or equal to 7. The analysis also revealed a mean reduction of the HADS anxiety score of 3.4 after 16 weeks of sertralizumab pegol, which further lowered to minus 4.1 at week 144. The decrease in the HADS depression score was also carried on from minus 5.0 in week 16 to minus 5.1 in week 144. Of note, a difference of 1.7 is considered minimal clinically important. The lead author, Professor Armstrong, and her colleagues pointed out that although the number of enrolled participants with anxiety and depression was limited, sertralizumab was associated with durable improvements in anxiety and depression for psoriasis patients over 3 years. The phase 2 FSCL1 trial delivered some interesting results on the IL-36 inhibitor spisolimab. IL-36 plays a key role in the pathogenesis of generalized pustular psoriasis, a rare but potentially life-threatening inflammation skin disease characterized by the widespread eruption of sterile pustules. In the 12-week randomized placebo-controlled phase 2 trial, FSIL-1, a single intravenous dose of the anti-IL-36 receptor antibody spisolimab led to a higher incidence of pustular lesions and skin clearance compared with placebo. 54% of patients in the spisolimab group versus 6% in the placebo group achieved complete clearance of pustules, corresponding to a general pustular psoriasis global assessment, GPPGA pustulation subscore of 0, which was the primary endpoint. The key secondary endpoints were a GPPGA total score of 0 or 1. A subgroup analysis of this trial assessed the treatment effects of spisolimab on the primary and key secondary endpoints in pre-specified patient groups according to age, sex, race, BMI, and different physician global assessment scores for pustular psoriasis. Efficacy of spisolimab was consistent across all pre-specified subgroups for the duration of the study. Subgroup treatment effect estimates were generally comparable with those of the overall trial population. Interestingly, spisolimab efficacy was independent of IL-36Rn mutation status. The proportion of IL-36Rn negative patients achieving the primary endpoint was 9 out of 21 patients, or 42.9%, with spisolimab and 0 out of 11 patients with placebo. For IL-36Rn positive patients, this was 7 out of 8 or 87.5% with spisolimab and 1 out of 6 with placebo. The p-value for interaction was 0.98. A limitation of the study was a small number of patients in some subgroups. Nonetheless, the authors concluded that the efficacy of spesolimab was consistent across all pre-specified subgroups and was generally comparable with the overall trial population. Some other interesting data came from an American study that assessed the management of general pustular psoriasis flares as depicted in US healthcare records from 2015 to 2020. Dr. Wendell Vallecantos from Connecticut presented the results. The hallmark of general pustular psoriasis, or GPP, which is a rare but severe multisystem chronic inflammatory disease, is a sudden and widespread eruption of sterile pustules of varying severity. Pustules during and after a GPP flare can often last for weeks and may lead to life-threatening complications. Due to the rareness and unpredictability of flares, there is only minimal research documenting the characteristics of GPP flares. Therefore, the aim of our study was to characterize flare episodes in GPP patients and respective treatments, said Dr. Vallecantos. This retrospective descriptive study included adult patients with GPP identified in US electronic health record data between 2015 and 2020. Only patients with at least 12 months of healthcare activity documented in the electronic health record after the GPP diagnosis and with data available were included. Flare episodes were identified using an algorithm based on diagnosis coding, setting of care, type of provider, GPP disease terms, and flare terms found in the electronic health record. Flare episodes were defined as consecutive days that a flare was documented in the records. Of the 48.6 million patients with electronic health record notes available, 1,535 patients with GPP were identified. Of these, 271 patients had at least one flare episode documented in the records and accounted for 513 flare episodes during the study period. More than 80% were white. Most flares occurred in the outpatient setting, 57%, followed by inpatient and emergency room settings. Most flares occurred 1 month after an initial GPP diagnosis, and, as Dr. Vallecantos pointed out, 87% of patients had flares identified on the same day they got the diagnosis. Various treatments were used. Most commonly, both during the episode and up to 30 days prior to an episode, were topical steroids, followed by opioids and other oral agents. Of note, 21% of patients were using opioids for flare episodes and 25% were not receiving any treatment during the episode and up to 30 days after, Dr. Vallecantos commented. Despite its limitations, this data shows a significant unmet need for the treatment of GPP flares, as evidenced by patients seeking treatment in inpatient and especially emergency room settings and a lack of advanced therapies beyond topical steroids. Lastly, treatment with opioids was common during flare episodes, indicating the need for pain management, Dr. Vallecantos concluded. Finally, I would like to talk about an analysis of the Phase 3 Voyage 1 and Voyage 2 trials that assessed the social and sexual well-being of patients with psoriasis on guselkumab and adalimumab. Moderate to severe psoriasis can impact social relationships and sexual health. However, data on the association of these domains with different treatments of psoriasis are scarce. Therefore, an analysis of the Phase 3 randomized double-blind trials Voyage 1 and 2 assessed the influence of therapy with guselkumab or adalimumab on social relationships and sexual difficulties in patients with psoriasis. Impairment in these domains was assessed with questions 8 and 9 of the Dermatology Life Quality Index, or DLQI. At baseline, patients with higher psoriasis area and severity scores, or PASI, tended to have also greater difficulties in these domains, which was especially true for women. After treatment with both guselkumab and adalimumab, the proportion of men and women having difficulties in their social or sexual life declined. Greater improvements were seen in patients with a better PASI response. At baseline, 31.2% to 34.9% of participating men and 38.9% to 44.1% of participating women had difficulties in social relationships. At week 12, a significant improvement could be seen with active treatments compared with placebo in both men and women. Both social and sexual impairments further improved continuously through week 24. At this time, in both men and women, treatment with guselkumab resulted in a significantly lower proportion of patients with impaired social relationships or sexual difficulties versus placebo, but also versus adalimumab. At week 24, only 3.8% of women treated with guselkumab versus 14.1% with adalimumab still had impairment in their social life, with a p-value below 0.001. The percentage of patients with sexual impairment was similar, 2.1% of women treated with guselkumab compared with 11.0% of those treated with adalimumab. Also, this was significant, with a p-value below 0.001. The authors concluded that in both men and women, guselkumab treatment resulted in lower proportions of patients with impaired social relationships or sexual difficulties compared with placebo at week 16 and adalimumab at week 24.
This podcast was produced by Medicom Medical Publishers.